Going here. Thanks for coming today. It's we're going to be facing the lunch carb coma, which always happens after lunch. So feel free at any time to get up, do some jumping jacks, pretend there's a Kinect in your room or something like that. It won't distract me at all. I'll probably take your picture, but that's about it. And so this there's actually probably a mistake we have to get out of the way first. In the guide, it says the name of this session is Making Crazy Money with Games in the Cloud, and that got misprinted and all that, and we tried to fix it. It was too late, so I don't mind if you get up and leave, but the real title of this talk is Making Crazy Money with Games in the Cloud. So yes, it's going to be that type of session, and my name is Brian Prince, and I'm the Chief Technical Evangelist for Windows Azure in the U.S., and my job is to travel around and go to events just like this and help people understand cloud computing, how does it fit in with what they're doing, when to use it, and just as importantly, when not to use cloud computing, and those sort of things. And when I'm not speaking at events, I'm usually working with customers, and those customers fall into one of two categories. They're either very large enterprises that are trying to leverage some specific feature of the cloud in their business, or they're small startup a social or casual game company. So I don't work with any companies that ship Xbox games. I don't know anything about Xbox except I played a lot as a passionate gamer. But I work with a lot of these startup game companies and help them leverage the cloud and what they're building. And so that's really what this talk is about, is a lot of those learnings, both from a technology approach, how can I build this game, both in my personal life, how can I find the time and launch this game, this business, and so on. That's what we're going to talk about today. So I'm happy to answer any questions for you whenever about the cloud or anything that we're doing. Feel free to just email me. I do travel a lot. I travel about 90% of the time, so it may take a day or two for me to respond to you, but I'm always willing to help people out and help you change the world by making an awesome, awesome game. And if you're inspired to build a game, you need to send me a free copy and put me in the credits. Or something like that. Whatever you want to do, I don't care. Okay, so how many of you have a great game idea? You probably all at some point in time have had a great game idea. And game ideas don't have to be absolutely unique. That's something that often holds people back, is they say, well, I have this idea, but you know, it's kind of been done already. And if you spend any amount of time on the internet, that whole web-connected thing, you'll see that a lot of games are really often permutations on other games or variations of a theme with maybe a unique twist. Like, for example, I love playing tower defense games. And there's a million of them out there, and they have kind of the same genre underpinnings, but a lot of times they have some unique twists to them. And so it's okay that your game isn't perfectly unique. That's actually pretty rare. It's okay to say, you know what, I want to build a game that's like this, but my spin on it is we're going to do this. So take this great game idea and run with it. And so we're going to give you some information as to why you should run with it. So when I was growing up, I'm turning 40 in August, August 23rd, if you want to send me a birthday gift. But it was the odd household, truly an odd household, that played games, right? I had an Odyssey 2000 and a Color Computer 2. I've had pretty much every console that's been shipped mass market in the U.S., and I was the outlier, if you will, and it was just kids played games. But now all us gamer kids have grown up, and the majority of homes play games. And so the average gamer now is 35 years old and been playing for roughly 13 years, not all at the same time. They've gone to school and the bathroom and things like that. And this is great news for me because I'm finally above average for once. I'm 40, so I'm above the age average. And I've been playing a lot longer than 13 years. And my gamer score is actually a little out of date. Little personal fact, I don't play anything that doesn't have achievements except for Star Wars The Old Republic, because it's an MMO that you can play by yourself, right? Because I don't like people. So it's really great to be able to play by myself and do that. And so if you ever want to play online, we can do that's fine. And also, Star Wars isn't a FedEx simulator. A lot of the other MMOs that I won't mention any names, World of Warcraft, but it's almost like a FedEx simulator, like, go into that cave and get me 10 bats, and then you bring them back. And it's like, okay, now go get me 20 dead wolves. And it's like, what am I, at FedEx? This is a job. This isn't fun. Star Wars, you get to shoot people, so that's fun. So another interesting change in the industry is this isn't an 8-year-old boy market anymore. While males are the minor majority, if you will, there's a lot of women playing games, both girls and women. And that's a huge untapped market. There are very few games that are targeting the female market. So if you have a game that you can twist or change or pivot to that market, you're going to be able to reach a huge market that hasn't been saturated yet. But when you look at the players that are spending money within games, it's the women that are spending the most money. So remember, a lot of casual games are, think of like a Cityville and Farmville on Facebook maybe. A lot of the games that you just play in a browser, all those are casual games and social games. And a lot of times you can spend money within the game. And 75% of the money spent within games is spent by women. So there's a huge market there to capture some of that revenue. And while we don't, as gamers, control the entertainment industry like we should, a single AAA title game is much bigger than the biggest movie or the biggest book that comes out. Halo 3 on its, anyone play Halo 3? Right, so Halo 4 is coming out the day before my wife's birthday, so we've already called in sick on that. But Halo 3 on its opening day nearly doubled the amount of money that Spider-Man 3 made on its opening weekend. That's a lot of money. And way more than Harry Potter's, the final book of Harry Potter series on its opening weekend. So games are actually generating much, much, much more revenue than the entertainment industry understands, which is why they made a game out of the movie, out of a game of Battleship. Right? So there's a game based on a movie, based on a game that we played when we were seven and threw pieces at each other. So the casual game market is huge, and it's growing very rapidly. It's the fastest growing part of the game market because a AAA title like Call of Duty or something like that is $60. I have to have a console. I have to have a TV. But a casual game, I can play anywhere, anytime, on almost any device usually. And so there's much more opportunity to be able to play. 200 million people a day are playing casual games, and this is when they normally play. As I work with companies, they can really, one thing is they track is very often is the average monthly player count. So my game might have, you know, 10,000 average monthly players or something, and that's how I track how successful my game is. And they know they have big spikes, one from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., which is that lunch hour. And so there's a big spike there where people are eating a sandwich at their desk playing a Cityville maybe. And then from 7 to 9 p.m. at night, once the kids are in bed or the kitchen dishes are done or something like that, people will sit down and play. Now, casual games, you might play a casual game for 20 minutes. Right? If I play a AAA title, I'm going to play for hours and hours and hours, like Skyrim fans. I had 240 hours into Skyrim. Till I took an arrow to the knee, of course. And but casual game players, they'll play their game for maybe 20 minutes. But they'll play a bunch of casual games at the same time, back to back, for a period of hours. So they'll play for 3 hours or 2 hours, but they're playing maybe 20 games within that time frame, jumping around a lot. So this is my son. This is not the person. But I don't know how many of you heard of Robert Ney. He, when he was 14, built a game called Bubble Ball. 14. So he doesn't have 20 years of development experience, right? And he sold that. It was downloaded 2 million times for $1 a piece. He made $1.4 million at the age of 14. Now, I have a daughter who's 12. I told her she's got 2 years left to pay for college, and she's going to get cut off. So if my point is if a 14-year-old kid can do this, anyone can do this. And coincidentally, this is great timing because with Windows 8, in the Windows Store about to come out, there's going to be a gigantic market, right? Windows today runs on 1 billion devices. Forget about phones and tablets, 1 billion devices. And even if we have a crappy sales year, that's still hundreds of millions of devices. So there's a huge, huge market. And people will, I don't know, my wife has a Star Wars thing, but she does. But it's a Starbucks thing. Like, she loves to go and get Starbucks coffee. And those are, what, $6, $10, $12 a piece. You have to get financing and all that. But people will look at a game, and like, I don't know if I should buy that game. It's $1.50. And they do all this research. But when you think about it, I might play that. If I pay $1 for a game, I'm okay if I only play it for an hour or two, because it's not a huge investment. So the average iPhone user actually spends $9.50 a month on apps, including games, and an Android user spends $8.60. I don't have a number for a Windows phone, But this did come out of an open market study. Now, if we look at Taptitude, which is on the Windows Phone, I don't know if any of you have it. It's a collection of tiny little easy, cheap games that were graphically designed by a developer with Paint. I mean, they're very simple graphics. And it's a bunch of little games in one, and you basically, as you play different levels in the games, you earn credits to unlock other games, and so on. It's very addicting, very casual-oriented. And they're making $1,750 a day in advertising. These are two brothers, I think they're brothers, right? Two guys in a basement clearing nearly $2,000 a day on a Windows Phone app. They're not even on the other platforms yet, right? Something that they could easily port over. And then Geekworks, they make several other games. They're clearing about $275,000 a year on their games. And some developers have success in selling their games. So buy my game for a dollar. And others actually, and so you'll get a moderate amount of downloads and purchases. So you make $10,000 on 10,000 downloads. Other guys, companies find more success with giving the game for free with advertising in the game. And you make far less money per game that way, per player. But you have 10 times, literally 10 times as many people who download and play that game because it's free, even though the other one only costs a buck. So a lot of game developers are shifting towards advertising as a revenue model, at least for their core revenue stream, because of that 10x factor. So here's the magic formula. You have to have a great game. It doesn't even have to be great. It has to be a pretty good game. And marketing, that's what a lot of people forget about, is you need to market your game, and we're going to look at some ways to do that, and that will give you success. And so like I said earlier, a lot of game developers, a lot of game companies are really entrepreneurs. They're small startups. They don't have a big office building, right? We're talking about like these guys with Taptitude and so on. So you have to have a little bit of entrepreneurial spirit going on. And there's two things that we all know you need when you're a startup or when you're an entrepreneur. Does anyone know what they are? What are the two things you have to get started? No, you don't need money. No, it's a garage and a dog. If you have a garage and a dog, you can start a company. That's kind of the requirements. And that dog is still waiting for that fish. But you can start doing this anywhere. As long as you have a laptop and some quiet time, you can start busting out some code and writing it. And the trick to it is to only write the code that only you can write. You should focus on only writing the code that is critical to your game, that is special about your game. So authentication, you should use a framework. Data storage, persistence, use a framework. Connecting the different players together so they can chat and yell at each other and play multiplayer, should use a framework. We're going to talk about all those tools and technologies. You should focus only on the game that is part of the game that is unique to your game, the code that only you can write for your game. And so you're probably going to fail when you get this first game out there, meaning you're going to write it, you're going to learn a lot, you're going to fall down a lot. And five people are going to download it. Four of them are related to you, and that's okay. I'm sorry, but try again. Keep trying. You're going to learn lessons, and eventually you're going to hit it. Overnight successes tend to take months and years to happen. So you'll refine your process, and you'll nail it, and you'll do really well. So this is how we're going to make money. We're going to build our game. We're going to do some magic, and then we're going to profit. So we're not going to focus too much on how to write the code of the game, because that's what the rest of TechEd is about. Right, you can go to any session on .NET and MVC and all that and learn how to write that code. We're going to focus more on what makes this a game and how can we make this game quicker for less investment of time and money and how do we get it out there. So the old way of shipping these types of games was the shareware model. How many of you played like Commander Keen or any shareware? Right, you would actually, there was a catalog and you'd call in an order and they would put the games on a floppy disk and mail it to you, who my children don't even know what a floppy disk is now, even though the save icon is still a disk. And you would get to play the first three levels for free, which is right here, and then you would hit a paywall, and you would never, most people wouldn't buy the game, right? That's where it's like, all right, if you want to play the rest of the game, that's $10. And most people would stop at that paywall and move on to the next shareware game. And so the vast majority of your gamers never saw the 80% of effort, all those levels and sound effects and bosses and strategy that you put into that game. Most people never even saw all of that hard work. So this didn't really work very well. So the new model is the whole game is free. You can play all of Cityville, and there are even MMOs and stuff that are completely free that you can play, right? So you can get to experience all of the content. But along the way, we're going to find things that you can spend your money on. Because what we have found out is in Western societies that we have more money than time. So I could grind through all of these levels and to find that perfect set of armor or that one sword that I need. But boy, it'd be a lot easier to just plunk down $5, which is, you know, a very easy spending money. Again, the cost of a coffee maybe, to get that sword and really crank through that level a lot easier. And so we'll look for ways through that game to monetize those players. And then we'll also often maybe have advertising within a game, right? So many of you are probably familiar with Facebook. They had their recent IPO. I believe the number of the 20% of Facebook's revenue comes from Zynga, the company that makes Farmville and Cityville and all of those other games. And that's Facebook is making that money because you're playing your game in the canvas, and off to the side you have all that advertising and stuff like that. So that's one revenue model, but getting that revenue within the game is kind of the next step as well for you. So as enterprise developers, as business developers, we often work on removing friction for users. Make it easier for them to run that report. Make them easier to know when there's an error in the database and make sure the clean data is going into the app and things like that. But in game development, we want to build in friction. We want to make it harder for the player. They want that challenge. And if you want, let them buy it away by buying that sword to beat the dragon at the end of the game instead of looking for it for 8 hours like you have to do in Kingdoms of Amalur. And so we want to be able to build friction in on purpose so that we can let the player buy that away later. So we're going to look at some ways to not spend money, because the one thing about entrepreneurs is they rarely have a lot of money to get started with. And you'll often see games on Kickstarter where people are trying to raise money to be able to fund their game. So one thing is you should probably look at moonlighting. This is one of the few side businesses and startups that you can do where moonlighting actually works in your favor. Usually if you're going to go start a company, I'm going to build this product and sell it or whatever, you should have enough faith in your idea to quit your job and bet your house and your family's food on being a success at that. But with gaming, it's really not that way. It's a different kind of feeling. So moonlighting is usually a good way to get started. But you need to make sure you check your company's moonlighting policies to make sure that this works. And a lot of times you just have to notify them you're doing this side project and confirming with them that you're only doing it on your hardware, on your time, and with your resources. Because normal employment law and contract says whatever you create while you're working for that company belongs to the company. Even if you work for a rent-a-car company and you build a game, they potentially can have a claim on that IP and that product that you made. So you want to clear that with them, and usually it's just a letter that they file in your folder for later to make sure. So for example, we have a very clear moonlighting policy at Microsoft, and there are two clear exclusions. Automatically, if you want to write a book, we want people, our employees, to be writing technical books, and you can use company hardware and email and things like that to communicate with your publishers and so on to write that book. And the second is publishing apps into the Windows Phone Store and the Windows Store. If you're going to build an app for Windows Phone and Windows 8, there's an automatic exclusion for that as well. If you're going to build an app, we automatically say it's yours, it's not the company's. But I had a friend who's an inventor. He was building some things. He designed a new laser and that sort of thing, and he had to work with our legal department to make sure that Microsoft Research wasn't working on anything like that, and that way the company didn't have any claim on what he was building, and that's kind of what you need to do with your own company, with your own employer. So obviously, being in the Azure track, I'm going to tell you that you should use the cloud, because one of the key reasons to use Windows Azure is to avoid the startup costs of infrastructure and that capital expense that you need to buy servers and get this up and running. Because the trick with casual games is they will go from nothing to super popular back to nothing again quite quickly. Not only with the dynamic nature of when people are playing throughout the day, but the fact that we'll talk about some strategies doing this later, that your game will rapidly gain in adoption across the population of players, let's say on Facebook. And you don't have enough time to go and buy another server and rack it and get it ready to respond to that spike, because it's going to happen too quickly and it'll be gone before you know it. And you don't want to. And if your game isn't popular, you don't want to end up with 6 servers in your basement, because there's only so many simultaneous Call of Duty games that you can play where you need game servers. So For your own purposes, and that's hard to get by the spouse as well, that you need to buy 6 servers. So by using the cloud, we can deploy very cheap, if not free, to the cloud to run the back end of the game, the hosting and so on, and scale it up or down directly with the amount of people that are playing the game. Also, you should target marketplaces. This is what has really made this the app generation, these app marketplaces. Beforehand, with the shareware world, for example, I had to build my own website and get people to come to my website, drive traffic to my website to get them to download and play the game. Where now with marketplaces, all the gamers have gone to the app stores, whether it be on Android or iPhone or Windows Phone or tablets or wherever you are, Steam, for example, or the Origins game app. That's where the buyers are. That's where the players are. You need to get your games there. And when I talk with a business developer, I ask them, you know, what do you develop in? And they say they're a .NET developer or they're a Java developer. They identify with the technology that they develop in. When I ask a game developer, they identify that they're a game developer. So they will do .NET. They will do Java. They will do Ruby. They will do whatever language, HTML5 and JavaScript. They will do whatever language they need to port that game to all of the different marketplaces if it's successful. So they'll start in one, and if it's successful, they will port it to as many as they can. That's why you can buy Angry Birds on every platform. My son, last week, bought the Angry Birds board game, where you actually build a little thing and you throw rocks across the table at each other. So target marketplaces, and you should have a website, too, to explain the game and have some screenshots, because people might look it up. But you really get a position in that marketplace well. That's why there's so much marketplace fraud, where people are gaming some of the different marketplaces to get in the top 10 and top 20 so that people will buy your game because they're not going to scroll to the 11th page. So every game, especially casual games, has a set of common needs, just like every enterprise application has a set of common needs around maybe logging and auditing and persistence and so on. So we're going to look at those and what we've done at Microsoft, our core DPE team, has built a set of toolkits for you. There's one for every platform. So there's one for iOS, for Android, for Windows Phone, and for HTML5. And then there's also a toolkit for the back-end services that you're going to need. The goal is that you build your game on top of this, so you're not spending your time building authentication code, but instead using your time writing the code for your game that you need. And the first one is leaderboards. Games have to have leaderboards. Now, as I work with game companies, leaderboards aren't about pride. They're not about, look what I achieved. It's about ego. It's about saying, I got to level 4, and Chris, my buddy, got to level 5. I know I'm better than Chris. I mean, come on. So I'm going to go back and play that game more. And it's an ego thing to get people to play the game more and to see, I didn't even know there was a level 39. I'm going to go... You know, I want to do. How do they get to level 39? You know, so it's a way to get people to go back and playing the game. Now, this leaderboard concept has evolved. I don't know how many of you have played Wordament. It's on Windows Phone and it's on Windows 8. And Wordament is this. It's kind of a boggle type game where you're looking for words within the matrix. My wife is addicted to this game, and they have a frenemies list. So they'll show the list of everyone who played that round in the world. But your frenemies are highlighted and floated to the top. So she can see how I did it, and she kicks my butt every single time. And she gets mad if she's not in the top 20 of that round. And that keeps her playing, right? And that she can see how her friends are playing in that game and that sort of thing, pulling it out from the random list of strangers that you have here. Now, a big innovation in the game experience was the social integration. And it started with, Zynga's really responsible for a lot of this integration, a lot of this innovation. But early on, back in the Mafia Wars days and so on, right, the game would emit to your Facebook stream things that you were doing in the game, like, Brian just did this. Brian just got 12 more vassals and things. I don't know how many of you got Mafia War invites all the time from your friends who were playing the game. So it's a very simple integration, but it let people know that you were playing the game. But that's about all it did. And that's fine, but it's evolved a lot since then. For example, I love SimCity. There's a new SimCity coming out, by the way, in February of 2013. You can buy it online right now ahead of time. But anyway, and I love SimCity. It was one of the first computer games I loved. And Cityville seemed a lot like that, so I started playing Cityville. And you get to the point in the game where to go any farther in the game, you have to send a friend, a Facebook friend, a package or a gift of some sort. Doesn't matter what it is. And they don't even have to play the game or ever use the package, but the act of sending the package kind of unlocks that next area, unlocks the next capability, which is great because basically what you're doing is you're forcing your players to market your game to their friends. So my friend is going to get in his stream, Brian sent you a gift from Cityville with carrots inside or whatever it is, and they're going to go, oh, okay, I'll click on that and I'll start playing the game and I'll get hooked on the game. And so while I was doing this, a friend of mine that I've worked for years with, Arnolfo Wing, he's a great BizTalk guy, and he does a lot of SharePoint and stuff like that. And I know his wife. And so I noticed, and we're friends on Facebook, and she was playing Cityville a lot. So I thought, well, at one point in the game, you have to connect cities together to kind of make it to the next level. So I connected my city with her, and she sent me stuff. I'd send her stuff and all of that. And I looked at her city once, and it's like it's a metropolis. Like, I have this tiny little quaint village. And clearly, she has spent hundreds of thousands of hours on this game. So I'm talking with Arnolfo, and I said, hey, Arnolfo, we were at lunch or something like that. And I said, you know, I play Cityville with your wife behind your back. And he goes, no, you don't. I go, yeah, I do. And I brought it up. See, look at that. He goes, no. That's my daughter, my 9-year-old daughter. You're playing games online with my 9-year-old daughter. So I stopped playing Cityville. But that social integration into that game is going to drive other people as a marketing channel, a natural marketing channel to the friends. Because if that player likes the game, likely their friends are probably interested in the game. So it's a great way to get that out. So by writing and forcing them to kind of emit stuff to that Facebook channel or Twitter or whatever is going to get them to market the game to their friends. Now, in-game commerce is also really important. Either in a virtual commerce sense, like I can go to the store and sell all my loot and then buy maybe a better sniper rifle for my level 39 sniper. Or maybe I use real-world money to buy in-game currency and then use that to buy stuff. So again, back to the Cityville concept, I get so many tokens for free every 24 hours to play. I can do 5 or 6 things, and then I'm out of tokens. Well, I either have to wait till the next day to play, which is great. They're saying, no, you can't play anymore. You have to come back tomorrow, which is that scarce resource thing that they're triggering in your mind. Or you whip out your credit card or Facebook credits or whatever, and you buy more tokens to keep playing inside the game. So you need a platform for that. And writing a credit card infrastructure is a pain in the butt when you're trying to get a game off the ground. So you want that. Now, this is also is inventory, right? People like to collect and maximize and their inventory and find things and try to find matching armor and stuff like that. And so inventory tends to be pretty important. And we don't want to lose inventory either. When they want to leave the game and come back later, they should have their same inventory. Does anyone know what game this is from? Yeah, Wind Waker, yeah. I am a Zelda nut. I will buy cat food if it says Legend of Zelda on it. So, and I'm sure I'll buy the new Nintendo device because they'll have a Zelda game on it. And I'll play the game and then I'll just put it away because none of their games have Xbox achievements. So, but I love Zelda. So game state is finally the important thing that you need to have. A lot of the stuff kind of ties into game state. When I leave a game and come back later, for example, I have to go to a stand-up meeting and then come back, I want to be able to pick that game up where I left off, and I want to be sure that I'm not going to lose my save games. And a trend that we are seeing that really, if you saw any of the E3 announcements with Xbox, but a lot of platforms are doing this, where I can pause a game on my phone and continue playing it on another device. So I might be playing on the PC at home, pause the game, play it on my phone, on the bus on the way to work, and when I get to work, when the boss isn't looking, play the game on my PC again and be able to access that. And you're going to have to use the cloud to be able to do that, so all those devices can kind of connect to the cloud like that. We have 4 Xboxes at home. When you have that many, you have to call them Xboxin. The kids, you know, they'll play on a multitude of different Xboxes through the day. My daughter loves Halo Reach right now, so she might, she just started Deus Ex. But anyway, she'll start maybe in the living room and then eventually move up to maybe the upstairs room. And because Xbox lets you save your games to the cloud, it doesn't matter which Xbox she's playing on. She can log into any Xbox and she can access those saved games from any of the Xboxes she have, that we have. And so saving your game state like that, so players can log in from any computer on any device as you port the game to multiple devices, is going to be a really cool differentiating factor to kind of reach these gamers that you want to sell to. Authentication is another tough nut to crack. I don't want to have to be a security expert. I just want to write a game, you know. So we have frameworks that sit on top of the access control service, which handles all that authentication for you. And really, for a web app, it's maybe 5 lines of code to integrate to allow people to let that framework handle all the authentication into your game. And that includes Live, Google, Yahoo, and Facebook, and enterprise identities if you want to let people log in with their Active Directory accounts, I guess. But so Facebook ID is probably the most common in the gaming world. People are comfortable doing that. And so you don't want to write that yourself, because the Facebook API is changing so quickly that the data, that even if you go to a form, a lot of times the information on that form is out of date 6 months later. And it, to me, it seems like they randomly change how they do authentication like every 9 months just to mess with you, just to wake you up. And so all your stuff breaks and you have to go and fix it. So by abstracting that away, by taking a dependency on the access control service instead, and then the service always makes sure all of that authentication mechanisms are working, you're kind of out of the authentication business altogether, right? And this is all built on open standards. There's no custom protocols involved. It's a protocol that Microsoft and Google got together to develop using what's called a SWAT token, simple web tokens. So it's based on HTTP and JSON, not all that WS star, Death Star protocol stuff that you see in enterprise authentication. It's very easy to work with, very easy to use and get started. So we're going to put all this together, and a lot of times when we ship SDKs, we ship very trivial samples. This time, we ship 3 samples with the toolkits. One is Tic-Tac-Toe. One is called 4Across, because there's another game very similar to 4Across that has a large company that owns a trademark on it that we can't call Connect 4. And then we built this game called Tankster. Now, there was a game when I was in college called Scorched Earth, where I probably would have had straight A's in college if Scorched Earth didn't exist. And it's basically tanks on a 2D map fighting with each other. And so we worked with a very successful game developer, Bart Skinner. I'm sorry, G. Skinner. I have another friend, Bart Skinner, is a professional game player. But and he worked with us to build this game. So this is a full-fledged HTML5 JavaScript game. Runs in any HTML5 browser, and has all of the features that we've just talked about. Leaderboards, commerce, save game state, game state saving, chatting between multiple players. And like many casual games, it's real time, a simultaneous play, but it's not real time. It's not real time like Halo, but it's simultaneous play where 4 of us are playing at the same time and we're kind of taking turns through the game or what have you. And the trick to doing that usually is the engine in the client merely plays what is in the game state package that it just got. So for example, in this tank game, I have a tank, and I'm going to say I'm going to use the nuclear warhead, and I'm going to shoot it at 45 degrees at a 10-pound power, and it's a deterministic game engine. So as long as I have those pieces of data, and I give that to all the other players, they can replay that attack. The same thing will happen on any of the games. And so we just, basically one player does it, we update a save game package, a game state package, and then that gets sent to all the other players, and they just replay that move. Same thing in checkers, right? If I'm going to move this piece from here to here, I don't have to have any significant networking going on. I just say, hey, piece X got moved from this part to that part, and all the other game players just kind of update their screen. So yeah, so we're going to cut over to this fantastic, and if you want to try to load tankster.net real quick, we can play. If you can get online, it's got a big browser. That's the groovy music that goes on. So if you want to get up and dance, you can as well. And you can see down here I can log in with Facebook and Live ID. So we've exposed those 2 ways of logging in using that access control service. And I'm going to use Facebook. And we can you can play locally by yourself, again, because I don't like people. Or you can play multiplayer with other people online. And there's a battle queue. So if any of you are in the battle queue, we'll see if there's anyone in the battle queue real quick. And it will just match us up. But you can see up top, I can pick, my name is in there already because I got that out of my Facebook profile. Wirehead is my Xbox gamer handle. And we're waiting for, is anyone trying to get in? All right. Oh, so you're in. Great. What are you playing it on? An iPad. So it works. Oh, we're in the game now, so I have to buy things. So nuclear missile, shotgun, bunker buster, dirt ball, that sounds like fun. Great, I've spent all my money. So I just have to wait until everyone else buys their stuff. So this is that in-game commerce. And basically, as you play each round, you get money to buy new weapons. If you don't buy the nuclear missile, you're stupid. Okay. Here we go. So it's my turn. So first thing I'm going to say is, welcome from the stage, if I can spell it right. And then that's using kind of peer-to-peer communication to do chat with each other. And now I have to change my weapon. I only have 15 seconds. So we're going to start with nuclear missile. I don't even know where everyone... Oh, there's someone right there. We'll see if we can hit them. We missed him. All right, there you go. There's no achievements in this game, so I don't practice. Duck and cover. Orange, is that you on the iPad? Who's playing? Who's orange? Ooh, it's someone like in Paris or something playing. Okay. It's orange's name's Cortex. We're going to wait for them. If not, I'll just bust out to a single-player game. Here we go. They're going to play. So my client now is downloading the game state file, and it's going to replay whatever they did, assuming this fabulous tech ed network works. Oh, we can prank them. That's a new feature. There we go. All right, so we're going to... I'm going to go back to... let's abandon this game, and I'll... Sorry, I'm just going to go to single player real quick. We'll play a couple rounds. All right, so local game. And then again up here, I can look at my ranking, what's my win and loss ratio. I can edit my character. I always like this guy here. And I confirm all that. And then we can say how many human and computer players are local. So you get the source code for all of this, all the JavaScript, all the HTML5, everything. And we'll play the local game again, buy the things that I want. Done. Say your prayers. Oh, he totally hit me out of the gate? That's not good. Okay. Mervs. Boom, boom, boom. Good. Okay. Let me play. Okay. Okay, so the nuclear missile, we're going to do a large roller. This is always fun. Watch this. There. Oh, I got him for 12 points. All right, so this game has all those basic capabilities in it. We've got the sound going on in the background. So we've given you everything you need. It's a very sophisticated kind of conceptual game that you can kind of launch off of. Now, this might be way more... Oh, just a second. Nice hit. Okay. So he's done. So the package comes with, again, the tic-tac-toe and the Connect 4 type games, to have a little bit of a simpler sample, because this is a pretty deep sample. So if I dig open, this is the tic-tac-toe game, and this is also all based in MVC 3, and we'll be updating it to 4, HTML5, JavaScript, and all that. You can see all the JavaScript that we're loading here. And the first thing is you can see modern web applications, even if it's a business app, tends to have a lot of static resources that we need to download into the game. JavaScript files, CSS files, images, and so on. And one of the easiest ways to start using the cloud is to store that stuff in Azure Storage, where we can serve it out to customers much faster than your own servers can, either with the global cache network that we have, which is the same network that Windows Update uses, or even just out of our data centers, you know, where you get 6 copies of all the data for redundancy purposes and all that. That way, even if you host the game on your own server, by moving all that storage up there, you'll be able to run more users on your server simultaneously, because your server isn't busy shipping all that data around. So these are the three generic kind of assemblies or JavaScript files that the toolkit gives you. And then these four here are the different components of JavaScript. One that runs the board. One that's kind of the overall game capability. The ViewModel.js is just, if you're familiar with view models, the model view, view model pattern. It's very works with MVC very well. And view model is really the bit of data that's going to go to the view that the view needs to be able to do its work. And then the controller itself, which controls the logistics of the game, calling out to the other pieces to get the work done. And we'll look a little bit at that. Well, for example, the if we look down here, why am I getting lost? Here we go. I should just do this. There we go. So the tic-tac-toe view model is very simple. It's got basically just it's just a property bag, a bunch of data. So for example, the name of the player, who owns this game, because I'm playing with a bunch of other people. Well, I guess Tic-Tac-Toe, technically that's one other person. But they could have multiple personalities, I guess. And then my friends, players in the group. Now, each game has a game queue as part of the Windows Azure Storage queue system. Every action that happens in the game goes through that queue, and there's a service on the back end that processes all those messages. And that comes from a very common scale pattern where we're going to disconnect the actions from the execution, the taking of the action and the actual executing of that action, and which is very commonly done in big-scale enterprise systems that we're going to use for this game here. So I have to know the name of the queue I'm using for this particular game of tic-tac-toe that I'm playing versus another person's tic-tac-toe game, the ID of my game, the URL to use to invite people, you know, the player's color, and so on and so forth. So it's very simple, just property bag that we're shipping around. So this is the index page for this game, the tic-tac-toe game that we're going to look at. We're going to skip over a bunch of this. But if we scroll down here, we're going to get eventually to a point where we got some methods in here. Here's where we start the game, and then there's one where we can invite people to the game. Oh, I missed it. Well, when we start the game, we're going to find out which board we're playing, and then, for example, out of the we're going to set up our board object and our game object, and the game object kind of holds the state of the game itself. And then, for example, here we received in through the view model the game queue ID, and we're going to set that to the controller, so as the controller does its actions, it knows which queue. Remember, we access these queues with REST, and we can do all of that through JavaScript in the browser. And so that's going to set up our game. If we go into our controller, for example, there are and the controller was written all in JavaScript as well to keep it easy. And I'm looking for the game action, update game status. Why can't I find the one I wanted to do? Yes, on move. Oh, there's one here where we invite people to the I just can't seem to find right now. Oh, here we go. So here is in the game service itself. For example, create a game queue, join the game queue, because we're going to monitor that queue and execute. Here's where we start a game. And basically, we're going to send an AJAX post to a URL, which is going to then intercept that call and start the game, which means we have to create a queue dynamically to process the game. We have to send invites to the other players and so on. And so that's what we're doing here. So we've written all the infrastructure for you to make these calls through JavaScript so you don't have to do all that JavaScript networking stuff. You just call the server interface, and that does all of that networking for you on the client side. So all that scaffolding is built in for you. And then here's the code that you're going to have to write for the actual game itself. So how do I move? Is a cell particularly empty? There's usually a method here. Is it a tie or not? How do I determine if it's a tie? Do I have a winner? Has someone won the game? And these are the type of methods that you're going to have to build into your game. So if we go back to any questions on any of that code? Right. So we're trying to minimize the amount of code that you have to write to actually build the game and let as much of that infrastructure come out of the toolkit for you as possible. Now we take this HTML5 app and it's been ported to Windows Phone and Windows 7. Windows 7. No, Windows 8. Because it's all HTML5. So on the client side, what you're going to be running, no matter the device, in this case it's an HTML5 client, we have some components that you can run down there. So there's some utilities to do just basic game stuff like managing inventory and state. And we have an animation engine. We have a very simple AI engine so you can play against AI players instead of real human players. And then all that server communication goo so that you don't have to figure out how to connect to the server and send the messages and all of that stuff. So that's a toolkit, and we have that for HTML5, for iOS, for Android, and for Windows Phone. And on the back end, as part of the HTML5 package, we also have the back end components. And so again, we're going to connect into ACS to do all that authentication. That's just the native SDK there. And then on our back end server, typically a worker role, in Windows Azure. We're going to run all of these components, and we're going to run them all on one server, and then we're going to scale up, and then our storage, we'll get to that in a second, and then we're going to scale up the number of servers as we get more players, and then scale them down again as we get fewer players throughout the day or as my game becomes popular. What a lot of game companies have found is your second and third game are a lot easier to build a player base for because you have one game already. And you can, if they like that game, they might like your second game, and you can market to them, and they'll see a big spike as their million players come over to game B, and the first couple weeks they'll see a big spike, and then those players that want to stay will stay, and maybe 30% of those gamers will go somewhere else, and then you'll level off, and then you'll get your real kind of running average that you can look at month to month to plan for resources and so on. So for example, we have a storage proxy for you. So these clients out there, if you know anything about Windows Azure Storage, there's a secret key. And I'm going to use that over REST to access that storage for blobs, tables, and queues. Well, I don't want to give that key and embed it in JavaScript because some jerk is going to take that key and upload pictures of cats or something and ruin my game. So I want to keep that key securely on the server, but I still need to let these clients connect with REST. So we build a proxy. They can connect and authenticate to my proxy, and then my proxy will call out the storage with the secret key, so that way I can protect the key. We'll have a game state service, a matchmaking service, a leaderboard service, commerce, inventory, achievement unlocking. The gamification of the world is becoming very popular. I was working with one group. They're building an app for tablets for diabetic children. And so as they report their diet and their behavior, their activities, and report how they're doing with their sugar tests and the blood sugar tests and all of that, they earn credits. And then they can use those credits in the app to play games that are built into the app. So they're kind of gamifying the fact that they need to pay attention to their diabetes and treat it the right way. Notification engine. All of these platforms have some sort of push notification platform where I can push a message to a player and say, hey, Bob wants to play Words with Friends with you. Then your friend will play around, it'll come back to you, and then you'll never play again. I don't think I've ever finished one of those games. But they're all different. Android, iOS, Windows Phone, Windows 8, they all do them differently because diversity is good. But so what we've done is abstracted that into the notification engine. So you use one engine, and it knows how to talk to all of those guys. So you don't have to figure that out. So that's all built in there. And then the communication stuff, to allow all that JavaScript communication. And we actually use OpenSockets and Node.js and things like that for some of that peer-to-peer communication, like the chatting that we had within the game. So all of that is provided for you kind of out of the box. And what happens is your game, your client, is going to send commands into that queue. Something's going to pick that command off of the queue and route it to the proper back-end service and execute that command for you. For example, sharing that game state out with all the other players because your tank fired and we need to share that with everyone else. So here are those three versions I was talking about. Right now, we've only released the source code for the HTML5 version. But we can talk with Nate. Nate kind of leads this project, and he has all the other source code, and we'll be releasing that over time as we get closer to Windows 8. So this, if you're familiar with the CQRS pattern, this is basically a lightweight platform for CQRS. And CQRS is all about, again, isolating. Just like in our application, we have horizontal tiers, and we isolate the UI from persistence because we don't want that code to intermingle. They don't get along. It's like tequila and scotch. It just doesn't work. But CQRS is about splitting verticals, separating reads from writes, for example, because they don't get along either in a high-scale environment. So what's going to happen is both players, we're in the middle of a game right now, or we're starting up a game, and in Windows Azure Storage, we have a blob file. And blobs are basically, it's just a file system in the cloud. And they're both, that one file represents the state of the game. Where are the players? What's their inventory, the points, their health? Who has shot, and how have they shot their weapon? And both of them are pulling that file. Did the file change? And if it changes, they'll download it, see if there's any what new plays have been made, and execute that on their local client. And that's how we get kind of that near real-time kind of peer-to-peer game going on. But the top player is going to take some sort of action. His JavaScript client is going to call the game services tier and say, hey, invite Bob to this game, or or let's take a shot, or whatever that action is, maybe buy a warhead. And that's the service head. That's just a very naked service head. And that's going to take that and then throw that message into a queue. Now, there's a worker code, all the back-end headless code, that's monitoring that queue, is going to take that message. And the reason we use a queue is because it scales very well, and it's a way for us to decouple the writing from the operations. And we'll never lose a message either. So the worker will pick up that message, decide what type of action that message is asking for. Are we inviting a player to the game? Did someone take an action in the game? Are they buying something? Are they sending a text message to someone? Whatever that is, it'll execute that action. And then we'll update the game state file as well. And then because the players are polling that game state file, they'll get it up. So it's kind of an asynchronous return, if you will, on that. So all of that engine is built for you. All you need to do is determine what those actions are that you care to respond to and write the code that handles responding to those actions in classes that you wire up. And I actually have enterprise customers that are using this game engine to be their CQRS platform in their healthcare software, which I think is kind of funny. So this is just going to go over and over. So we've already played the game. We can play more if we want. But the toolkit is pretty broad. We have a lot of guidance built in with documentation and architecture of the toolkits. The tools themselves, we have all the server-side API, the client libraries that you're going to use, and a test client. Because the test client, since everything is driven off of this queue, if you want to simulate a game, there's no reason to play the front-end game, although it'd be fun to just sit around and play games all day. But to actually fire the messages into that queue to do the testing of the back-end that we need, and the test client does that for you. And then we have all the samples. So the biggest sample is Tankster. It's very sophisticated. The HTML5 and the Windows 8 version of that is available. And then we also have the simple games, Tic-Tac-Toe and the Four Across game. If you're looking for a sample to kind of figure out how to do this, that's not so involved and so complicated, because the Tankster really does have a lot of stuff going on. So there are four toolkits. I expect you to memorize these URLs right now. These will all be on online in the deck that you can get later. But the first one is the social game toolkit. That includes the social backend, so all those backend services, and the HTML5 client stuff. That's all in one package. And that includes the Tankster sample and so on. The other three templates are actually kind of generic platform toolkits that we've made for those different platforms. So for Android, iOS, and Windows Phone 7, there are Windows Azure toolkits that will allow you to build the clients you need to interact with this back-end game engine that we've provided for you. And with this, you should be able to build that game and port it to a lot of different platforms, make a couple $1 million, and be able to afford college for your kids. All right, if you haven't downloaded the Azure SDK, here's a short link. Or just go to windowsazure.com, go to the Develop tab. It's a one-click install, whether you're doing .NET, Java, Python, PHP, and so on. It'll just, with web platform install, install everything you need. We just had a big release, 1.7, last Thursday, with a lot of new features. For example, the new websites, Windows Azure websites, you get 10 free websites. And so all this back-end stuff, the service heads, for example, you could run in Windows Azure websites for free. So that way, you really don't have anything out of pocket to get going with this. But how many of you have MSDN? Yeah, so probably half of you. That's great. So if you have MSDN, you can get Windows Azure for free. You get about $3,600 of Azure resources for free for the year. And you have to give a credit card, but it's never charged, just to prove that you're a human, that you're over 18, so you can accept the terms of service. What happens is you get a monthly budget that you can spend on different resources like compute and data and bandwidth and so on. And when you burn that budget, we just turn the service off. So we won't charge your credit card. It's called a spending cap. So if you hit the cap, we'll turn you off. And then the next month, your budget will renew and you can turn everything back on again. So that way you can test all of this and play with it all, either for work or for games or whatever, pretty well, without any risk of ending up with a $100,000 credit card bill. If you don't have MSDN, you kind of have two options. The first option is to just quit your job and work for someone who will give you the tools you need to do your job. But if that doesn't work for you, there are Azure trials as well. So you just log in, and there's a big green button that says free trial, and you'll get a three-month trial account with less resources than what MSDN gets, but you'll get enough to kind of get going and kick the tires and try this out, right? right? And so hopefully that'll get you started. If you guys have any questions, I'm happy to take them now. Please make sure to fill out the surveys that are online, download the SDKs, and get rolling. And go sit in one of those beanbag chairs and start banging out a game, work with some people, right? And the first question I usually get is, I'm a developer, I can't design graphics worth a crap. And when I'm at design conferences, they say the inverse of that. They say, well, I can think up the game and I can draw the graphics, but I don't know how to write any code. Well, there are several websites out there where you can, they're kind of play matchmaker between developers and designers, either to partner on the game or to outright just pay them for their time. And it's usually pretty inexpensive. But I would even just do your own graphics, even if they look like your kid did them, and just to get that kind of skeleton built, and then you can go back in and backfill in all the design that you need, right? So there are, the evaluation that you can fill out. You can get a little USB dancing geek guy, and there's an MS tag to just jump to the evaluation right now. But does anyone have any questions or anything like that? Yes. Oh, okay, so the question is, on Windows 8, what's the difference or how do I pick between HTML5, XAML, and even DirectX? So I'm not a Windows 8 guy, I'm a Windows Azure guy, right? So this is from an outsider's opinion. DirectX is a specialty skill that people who do game development have learned and invest in. And so there's definitely a learning curve there. Between the other, so I would only do it if you're already doing DirectX. Between XAML and HTML5, and XAML is going to let you do C# or any of the .NET languages, for example. I would do XAML. If you're a ninja at XAML, stick with XAML. But long term, you can't port XAML to iOS, for example. With the HTML5 stuff, it will run with very little work. It'll run on many more different platforms. So as an investment, it's probably better to start with HTML5. If you're new to both languages, XAML and HTML5, I would probably start with HTML5, right? Just, again, as a game marketplace thing, right? XAML guys are probably going to send me an email, but that's okay. But either way, it will work. It's just that HTML5, you're going to be able to ship to more platforms more easily. Yeah. But you have to like JavaScript. For a long time, I've hated JavaScript. It just, to me, didn't feel like a real language. It was my own personal issues as a language until I found jQuery, which is like the catch-up, right? Because ketchup makes everything taste good. So with jQuery on top of JavaScript, I could finally do well with JavaScript. And now I like using it all, especially with our latest JavaScript tools. So. Any other questions? Yeah.
Can you just talk through the process of like taking that tank game and then putting up an Android marketplace or iOS?
Sure. All the marketplaces do work differently, and you have to, and they all have their own rules, right? Like what type of games can you put in, what's legitimate content for the game, like, you know, adult content, things like that. But beyond that, you have to sign up for accounts with them, and each marketplace has different ways of doing that. Like, I think Windows Phone is $99 for a year. Android might be, I think, is free. I can't remember that. And with HTML5, you're mostly probably going to you're going to market through Facebook. That's the marketplace for HTML5 beyond the Windows Store, because Facebook games just run in a canvas within their frame, and then you can for very little money buy even advertising on Facebook to drive traffic to your game. For HTML5 on devices like a tablet or an iPhone or a phone device or something like that, they're either going to be going to your web server to play the game directly, and they're probably not going to be buying it out of a marketplace. That's where you're going to have a native game that'll ship through the marketplace. And so, for example, there's PhoneGap and Marmalade and so on that let you build the game once in their platform, and they then compile out to all of the different Android, iOS, and Windows Phone and so on, so that you don't have to know all of the different languages to do that. And a lot of successful money-making games are built on those platforms so that they don't have to learn all of those different languages. So if you truly are looking to try to, from the get-go, target all those different platforms, you might want to start with something like PhoneGap or Marmalade. How do you tap into advertising revenue? Most platforms, and it's different on every platform, right? Apple has their own, Google has their own. We have ours, although there are generally different vendors. And there's usually a control that you drop into your game. So at the top of your game, if it's a vertical game on a phone, there'll be a banner at the top for advertising. And that's just a control you drop in. You create an account with them. And generally, the model is either by impressions, the number of times the ad is seen, you'll get a little bit of tiny bit of money, or every time it's clicked on, so it's a cost per click, you'll get actually more for that type of model, but very few people click on it. The tricky thing is, this is probably unethical, but is to put the game near the menu bar so people accidentally click on it all the time, which pauses the game, opens up the advertising, and then they, you know, and then you get money. But that's probably bad advice. But they're basically controls. So you're going to find who you want your ad company to be. You know, Microsoft has one, Google has one, and so on and so forth. Then there are other third-party ones out there. They sell the ad space. It's like you own the billboard by the highway, and some other company is selling that ad space. And you can put in, usually they let you control what types of ads you'll support in your space, and even block different companies that you don't want to advertise in your space. If you're competing with Zynga, you don't want Zynga's game ad to pop up in your game and drive traffic away from your game to theirs. So most of these platforms allow you to block different types of advertising and categories as well. It's a good question. Any others? This side of the audience really is not keeping up with the other group. So another question in the middle. Yeah. Through what? Yes. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, so the question is about in-app purchases, and there's two types of scenarios here. One is I got the trial of the game, and I want to buy the game, and that's provided by however that marketplace controls that. Right? So Windows Phone does it differently than Android, and that's part of that phone's SDK or tablet's SDK. The in-game purchasing, like I want to buy that sword so I can more easily kill the dragon, you can either, so we have the infrastructure but in this toolkit to do half of that, and you have to wire it up to PayPal or whoever you're going to use. The trick is to do the purchase in their profile. They have to set up their payment details so that you have that, because you don't want to break the game experience to go do the purchase, right? You don't want to leave the fantasy world to go to PayPal. So you set all of that up ahead of time in their profile. In the game, you click buy, you confirm whatever, you have a two-button confirm to do that. That'll send a message to your back-end engine through that process we have. And then you have to wire up to whatever payment gateway you're going to use, PayPal, Facebook credits, whatever. We're working on a Facebook credits and PayPal plug-in to that, but it's not ready right now. Right? And the reason Facebook started their credits thing is because everyone was in-game purchasing and keeping all that money. Like, wait a minute, you're on our platform. We should get some of that. And that just like the Xbox points that you can buy, because it's a platform thing, I can buy one bag of Facebook credits or Xbox points and spend them inside any of the games. It's the same currency. And then they just take a cut of that when you buy the points up front. But if you're going to go to a platform, I would usually use the native currency, like the Facebook credits, and just interact with their Facebook credit API so that you don't have to deal with credit cards and merchant accounts and all of that. It's worth the 30% they take, in my mind, to do that, especially since they're probably losing 3 to 5% off of that just for the transactions themselves, right? So we have probably 80% of the work done for you, and you have to wire it up right now to that Facebook credits API yourself. And we have that, but we do have that work in the pipeline, so that it's completely turnkey. But we're just no. So yeah, so everything we're talking about is not on the Xbox at all, and. Right now, I'm not aware of, unless you buy an Xbox SDK, yeah. Yep. Yeah. That would be cool. Right now, we don't have a way to do Xbox points in a third-party fashion. So you're going to have to go to your own transaction platform or to Facebook credits or something like that right now. It'd be cool if we did it, but again, I'm not part of the Xbox team, so. Anyone else? All right, well, I hope you enjoy the rest of Tech Ed. Have fun at Islands of Adventure. I was there last week, and the Harry Potter world is pretty awesome. And I'll be down in the Azure booth and around if you have any other questions as well. So thanks for coming.